WVU Talk on Trib Live Radio is brought to you by Frank Walker Law, criminal defense attorney, frankwalkerlaw.com.
Trib Live Radio presents the College Football Locker Room with Pitt beat writer Jerry DePaula, Penn State beat writer Bob Cone, and West Virginia beat writer John Harris. We got the local college football teams covered on Trib Live Radio.
College Football Locker Room on Trib Live Radio.
Every week.
It's always a laugh here. A barrel of laughs here. I'm John Harris with Bob Cone. Bill West will be joined later by Jerry DePaula.
Maybe.
Well, yeah.
I expect him to come racing in a hurry, like papers flying everywhere.
Just all the shivel and angry and all that thing. And we got a lot to talk about. The Mountaineers back on schedule last week, Bill, and it wasn't pretty. And I don't know if any of us are surprised, but it's definitely Groundhog Day in Morgantown, West Virginia. We're just seeing the same thing over and over again.
I think so. Like I said, I'm not sure anyone really anticipated being a lot different. You know, Holgorsen was quick to point out in the Big 12 teleconference because one of the reporters, I think it was ESPN guy, suggested it was 28-1, the combined record of the four teams they've lost to, and Dana was quick to correct that it's 30-1. So he's still, you know, on Tuesday he said that you have to move past, you can't cling on to, I guess, the hardship they had in October, the difficulty of the opponents, but it's certainly in the back of his mind, and I think the back of the players' minds. They had a really tough road. They didn't fare particularly well or even give themselves much of a chance to win any of those games other than the Oklahoma State overtime game. Now comes the chance to really show whether this is a team that is in the middle of the Big 12 and obviously below the cream of the crop, but still, I guess you could say, competitive, or is it a team that really has lost all direction in the Big 12 and might end up at the bottom of the barrel?
Yeah, we've been talking about this down in the office. Just the rest of this season and looking ahead, if that's as good as it is, it's going to be. Do you think that's going to be good enough? I mean, is it going to be good enough for Dana Holgorsen to remain? Is it going to be good enough to satisfy Mountaineer fans? I mean, that's just middle of the pack.
I'm sure it won't be good enough for Mountaineer fans because what fan base out there, especially in places where football does matter, is willing to accept perennial 500 records. Whether the new athletic director, Shane Lyons, is okay with it, I guess we'll see. I'm not sure when they moved to the Big 12 if they really thought they had a chance to be a title contender, especially on a yearly basis, when you're competing with the Texases and Oklahomas and Oklahoma States and, again, now Baylor and TCU, which were maybe not laughingstocks, but certainly weren't powerhouses that long ago. Now they're very relevant and perhaps the most coveted or most respected, I should say, programs in the Big 12. So I don't know what the standard is for West Virginia. And I'm sure Dana Holgorsen will not admit anything less than the best. They'll keep it vague and somewhat subjective. But I can't imagine that they truly believe that, you know, 8-9 win season is something that they can do every year in the Big 12.
Well, if you want to get rid of Dana Holgorsen, is there a better solution? If there's no better solution, then you
I know Bob has strong feelings on this.
Well, I don't know how strong they are. I just think that Dana has almost a bigger problem than the inability of his team to crack the Big 12 elite, and that is he's got a new athletic director, and that's a dangerous position for a coach who is inching closer to the hot seat that, you know, remember going into last season, he was on the proverbial, I forgot to add proverbial, hot seat. You always say proverbial when you want to express a cliche, but you're too lazy to come up with anything better than a cliche, so you say proverbial, so you're acknowledging it's a cliche. At any rate, he's back in that position. And these next few games might have a lot to do with his future, compounded by the fact that Shane Lyons is not the AD who hired him. That would be Oliver Luck, who is, but he's still with the NCAA, and he and he gets to watch Andrew play every other week or whatever, which may not be a great thing.
Hang out in Indianapolis. Not working well.
Where the Colts are going.
Yeah.
At any rate, we digress again. At any rate, it's, you know, like I said, Shane Lyons, who came from Alabama, where last I heard they play a decent brand of football and is used to, now he's a West Virginia guy also. So that actually might even make it more dire for Holgorsen. Not only his AD just came from Alabama, but he's a Mountaineer at heart, and you know that he would like to see better than what's going on right now. And I believe that most athletic directors always travel, or at least keep within arm's reach, a list of potential coaching candidates, mainly football and basketball. Not only because, you know, that it's the nature of the sport now, and you know we've seen, you know, some firings already by midseason, and we could be headed for a record number after the season. Just kind of indicates that with all the money and prestige at stake, these coaches have a short leash, and by golly, I just said another cliche.
By golly.
You know, this is a family show. I kind of, John, you weren't here last week when I was told, when Josh gave me permission to say, you know, a naughty word. But anyway, I'm not going to do that now.
We did just come from a show where Tim used the term douche dart, I believe. So.
Well, that's true, but I'd like to think this show has higher standards. I would like to think that. I'm not sure we do. At any rate, so this is what I think what's confronting Dana Holgorsen. I read a New York Times story from Sunday where he was mentioned as being among those coaches who might be in trouble. So be interesting to see not just from, you know, what bowl game is West Virginia going to play and where they're going to finish, but the outcome of these games might have a lot to do with whether he's back.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, the remainder of the schedule is against the softest part, I guess if you want to call it that, the Big 12. Again, Texas Tech still presumably kind of in that middle of the pack. They're certainly not up there with TCU, Baylor, Oklahoma, and Oklahoma State, but they still have an incredibly potent offense. They're, I think, third or second in the country in total offense. Now, their defense is terrible. So if Dana Holgorsen is the offensive mastermind that WU touts him to be, that he himself somewhat...
He'd be the first to tell you.
To what? That he is an offensive mastermind?
Just ask Dana if you don't believe him.
You know, I think you guys overstate his...
He's very confident.
Absolutely. And he has up to this point, or up to the... I guess you can include his first year with West Virginia. They've had good offenses. This year, they're struggling because they have an inexperienced quarterback. They have a very inexperienced and also young overall wide receiver corps. So the whole, you know, air raid mentality that he has kind of cultivated everywhere he's went, isn't going so well. And on the flip side, they're not running the ball particularly well either. So they're
other than that, the offense,
everything's great.
Yeah, pretty well.
And it's, well, the hard thing is they're still ranked in the top, I think, 40 in the FBS in passing and rushing. Rushing, I think, is 25th. So when you look at it that way, so okay, they're still one of the better offenses in the country. But the Big 12, there's kind of a handicap there because everyone has offense. No one really plays defense. So I don't know whether to give them credit and say, okay, they're not simply not as good as a TCU and not as good as a Baylor, or is it really a case of, again, they're benefiting from terrible Big 12 defenses, and if they were in the SEC, they would be dead last in offense.
Yeah, the Big 12 reminds me of, in terms of offense, reminds me of baseball during the steroid era, when all the, you know, all the home runs and all the hitting statistics were kind of out of whack. And as you said, the, you know, yes, there's some very good offenses, some talented, very talented players, Heisman Trophy candidates, good coaches, but some pretty poor defense played in that league as well.
And it's, I think, accepted to some extent that way. You know, it's
well, they probably like it. You know, every game is a shootout, and fans like points and all that. Okay, I just want to say two things. Before I forget, because I do tend to forget things a lot more lately.
Write them down like I do. I write everything.
Well,
down
I did.
Like
I wrote down 30-1. I found it kind of interesting that Dana immediately corrected the reporter having that 30-1 figure at the front of his brain, which you know, it's almost like he's preparing his defense for when, you know, he gets called into the office. But Shane, they were 30-1. What are we going to do?
I think that is, again, he denied it yesterday when the question was brought to him again, what do you make of this past month having that kind of competition to deal with? And you know, he gave the more stock coach answer of, we move on, we don't focus on it. But yeah, I thought it was very telling that he corrected the reporter without even hesitating, without even having to say, I need to look
up. Probably has that number tattooed on his forearm by now.
So I think if he is brought in front of Shane Lyons and has to make his case for why he deserves to stay, that will come up immediately. And again, especially if we see the college football initial playoff rankings or whatever they're called just came out yesterday. And
yeah, it's a snub.
Well, right now, yeah, TCU and Baylor are not in the top four. I think TCU is 9 and Baylor 6 or 5, something like that. Josh, as I can tell, going to look.
And
so their strength of schedules are the indictment against both of them.
Once again, and they both have, you know, they play each other, but they also play, I think one of them plays at Oklahoma.
Yeah,
still.
Well, they almost all have to play each other. That's the thing. Yes, they both have to play Oklahoma State.
Right. So I, you know, we're looking at another scenario where the Big 12 is locked out of the Final Four.
If that question came up in the Big 12 teleconference on Monday, and I thought Dana answered it fairly well. He basically said one of these teams has to run the table. If it's a situation where A beats C, A beats B, B beats C, C beats A, they are going to knock each other out. And right now that is the case. Oklahoma State, Baylor, TCU, all unbeaten. Oklahoma has one loss, which I can't remember who it came to, but I think it was one of those three. They're not in good position. They need either Baylor or TCU. They certainly look to be the strongest, one of those two to go undefeated.
Well, what they really need is a conference playoff, and that's why – this is what the Big 12 is looking at for as long as they have 10 teams and they can have a playoff.
There it is.
More often than not, I think they're going to find themselves in this very spot.
Yeah.
And I don't know if there are any immediate plans to expand. I'm sure they're thinking about it, maybe just for this reason, but right now they're sort of in a bind.
Well, I think there is some discussion about expansion. One of the West Virginia writers interviewed E. Gordon G., the president, the other day, and I guess the president is involved with the Big 12 committee and talks about expansion. And you know, they keep their eyes on Houston, which is having a great season. Memphis is having a great season. Those are both logical candidates for the Big 12, but again, I don't know if they want to split the pot, or I guess the pie more ways in terms of the money. They like the fact that it's only 10 teams getting that money.
Okay, well, then they don't have to be in the Final Four of the college football playoff.
They just need someone to go undefeated. I mean, that's when you look at the other conferences, you know, the ACC, I don't know, do we really think the ACC champion is a phenomenal team this year, or is it just the fact that Clemson's going to go undefeated?
I think Clemson is very, very good, and obviously the committee does too, because they have number one. And that was also my dark horse pick before the season, unfortunately.
You're a believer in
Dabo. Unfortunately, I changed my mind at the last second, and I didn't have the guts to go with him.
And Dabo Swinney, definitely the best locker room dancer among
it's true.
Coaches after the Notre Dame game. I got a couple points about West Virginia. We can move on because we're going to be beating this dead horse.
Yeah.
The rest of the year, Dana.
That's what we do.
I think Dana's greatest strength is his weakness with all this. I mean, you look at TCU; they go out and they hire Sonny Cumbie, Doug Meacham, totally turned their offense around. That's what they needed was offense. Well, Dana's his quarterback guru, but he really hasn't come up with that quarterback yet. You know, his own guy. He's coached quarterbacks, but he hasn't gone out really yet and recruited this guy and developed him and turned him into this Dana clone, which is kind of like, so if we're looking at things and we're saying, okay, he's not a defensive guy, unless they're going to go out and just throw a lot of money at the best defensive coordinator in America and bring him in and really make their defense great. He's kind of boxed in. I don't know what he really can do right now.
I think Tony Gibson is a good defensive coordinator. I think he's done a fairly good job of recruiting defensive players. But again, the Big 12, the lockdown defense is incredibly hard to cultivate. So I'm not sure. I mean, even the way Dana and his assistants talk about it, they always circle back to having to outscore teams. It's never about they need to stop Baylor, they need to stop TCU. It's always about trying to slow them down enough so that you can win 50-45.
And which they have not done well. And, nope. You know, I don't think he's going to get fired this year. Only way I could see it happen is if they just totally bomb out and don't get to a bowl. Because it doesn't take a lot to get to a bowl game anymore.
Okay, so let's assume he won't, and next year is the ultimatum year, right? He'll probably get one more year, put up or shut up. What are their prospects for next year, you think?
Their offense will almost certainly be better because, again, they have so many young players right now that they're really just playing without any clue what they're doing, the wide receivers in particular. So you would have to think the offense improves, which, again, is what Dana harps on and is always focused on. The defense graduates, not sure how many starters, but certainly more than half. That'll be somewhat problematic. But, again, the philosophy of the team and almost every team in the Big 12 is – you can do without a great defense or even a particularly good one. You can be a 500 team with just great offense. I think that's what Texas Tech is doing this year.
But is there another quarterback on the horizon, or is it looking like Skylar Howard again?
Well, could be Skylar Howard. I'm not sure Skylar Howard's necessarily a bad quarterback. He's just inexperienced. This is his first year as a true starter. They have guys that Dana recruited are there. One is currently playing wide receiver. The other one is working in at running back. So – there are questions about that. The fact that the guys they brought in
just
to play
a few questions. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but
a lot of questions with Dana.
But the talk is still. I mean, the interesting thing about William Crest, who's the running back, and David Sills, who was again the quarterback prodigy that USC offered, and he committed to in seventh grade. They're still on track to be quarterbacks, according to Dana. They just because they burned the red shirts this year doesn't mean that they have given up on them as quarterbacks. They just feel that they are athletic enough they need to use them this year.
Who's the backup?
Right now, I believe it's William Crest. Is number
oh,
two
really? So he is actually a quarterback? Because, you know, when I was around the team last year, he was kind of intriguing. And, in fact, they burned his redshirt season. They wanted to give him some reps, and then he got hurt. Mm-hmm. And I always thought he would be the guy to play quarterback this year, not Skylar Howard. So something happened.
Well, when they were doing the preseason stuff, even spring ball, I guess that's when I do recall Dana talking about it. He was very high on William Crest, but again, it was a question of understanding the offense. And Skylar Howard at that point in time still had the most game reps and the most familiarity with the offense. And the other guy that Dana brings up a lot is Chug, who he actually has a kind of crazy last name, Chugging Off, I think it is, knows the offense really well. I think it's Josh Chugging Off. Yeah. He understands the offense well, but, again, doesn't have these athletic gifts that David Sills and William Crest do. So there's a lot of things left to be proven, I guess, by all these redshirt freshmen or true freshmen.
Skylar Howard played very well down the stretch, as we all remember. But let's also remember who he was throwing to. He's throwing to Kevin White, Mario Alford. He had, I think, a better line than he does this year.
Yeah.
And Russell Shell is, who knows what's going on there. But Shell was a serviceable or even better than serviceable running. He was a decent running back last year. He was a good 1-2 punch with Smallwood. That's not there either.
Yeah.
For Howard.
The issues with Shell are a little strange, and that was discussed at length yesterday by Juwan Sider, the running back coach. And Sider says that Shell is playing well. It just doesn't show in the stats because of bad luck, which
what?
That's a little hard to believe. Yeah, that's what he said. It's just, we missed a block that time. He seemed to dismiss that Shell is playing poorly and more so said it's a case of Shell just getting inopportune carries.
Well, as we all know,
inopportune carries.
Yeah.
College.
That could be the ball that time.
That could be a whole new statistic. You know, would that be an advanced stat? Metrics.
You could
metrics
in measure
football.
Measure the defensive
inopportune
guys.
Carries.
This is not sounding.
I see.
We're not helping Dana right here.
Dana was a little more clear about it. He said they challenge Shell. They need him to respond. They hope that the Texas Tech game can be a game where he gets to respond, because, again, Texas Tech is horrible. They give up 270 rushing yards a game. So plenty of opportunity for both Smallwood and Shell to go over 100, as they did last year against Tech.
Not surprised the assistant coach didn't say anything critical. That's how it goes. And most head coaches won't either. Holgorsen is one head coach that sometimes, in a moment of candor, will say what's on his mind, and it's not always complimentary. So I would take Sater's comments with the traditional and grain of salt. That's
proverbial.
That's two cliches already for you, Bob.
Three?
Okay.
Yeah, and we're not even through the first half hour.
Cliche meter.
So I could be on a record pace.
Bob is far ahead in the lead.
Now I forgot what I was going to say, because I'm just...
Yeah,
I'm flummoxed by this torrent of cliches coming out.
I think the fact that Shell's his yardage and his carries have regressed in recent weeks is an indication that there are questions about his productivity. And, you know, John, I know you wrote about it in the beginning of the year. They asked him to step aside a little bit and let Smallwood be the guy. So I don't know if this is a case of Shell still wrestling with his role, his identity in the offense. I think there's still some issue with him adjusting to the style of their run game. Yeah. Because, again, in high school, Shell was a traditional, you know, I formation kind of downhill runner who had all these athletic gifts and was just usually superior to everyone he played against. And when he got to Pitt, they were kind of the same, you know, more of a power run game. But now they have this shotgun, pistol kind of stuff, and he's running it kind of outside angles, or at least more angles. I think there's just questions about whether he has truly assimilated to the WU offense.
I think that's a good point. I think maybe he wanted to get closer to home with his young daughter, his young kids. Maybe if he had a chance to think about it, he might have looked at some of his other options. Is where do I fit better as a running back? The West Virginia style it's not necessarily running back friendly. It's quarterback friendly, receiver friendly. You know, running backs catch the ball a lot. They don't necessarily play the traditional running back role, but it was a great situation for him, a major program, close to home, a chance to be close to his family. And like you say, he had a decent year last season. Yep. He led the team in rushing. Smallwood has developed maybe a little bit quicker than everybody thought. He's learned the system better than Russell has now, and as a result, he's behind him on the depth chart. And all it's going to take, though, is one big game, which could happen against Texas Tech with a poor run defense.
Entirely possible. I do wonder, though, if Shell regrets transferring, because now Pitt, of course, would love to have a healthy running back, or more of a first-string running back, since they're on, what, number four?
That's the irony. He would fit perfectly with the style of play that they have, much more traditional offensive style.
Maybe he'll go back.
Be careful what you wish for.
That's right.
We'll see what Jerry think about that. I'd love to ask Jerry. I think Jerry may have a different response to that.
Yeah, but Jerry has to be here to respond.
Why don't you answer for him? Can you answer for Jerry?
No, I would never.
You can't do that?
Never, ever would I.
You don't have a Jerry impression up your sleeve?
Can you just give us a Jerry voice? Just do that.
I refuse to be put on the spot, but I will work on it. I need to be prepared. Sometimes I want to be prepared. It doesn't happen often.
Well, that wasn't Jerry.
We got a minute. We're going to let Bill just close it out on West Virginia before we take a break. Any final thoughts?
Well, the only thing that jumped out to me was talking to Jared Barber, who's a redshirt senior linebacker. Missed, I think, a significant portion of last year with an injury. But just asking him about the fact that this West Virginia team has not finished well in November every year they've been in the Big 12. They went 1-3. And it's not necessarily because they were always playing great teams. I can't remember which team you point. I think Iowa State, either that or Kansas. He said, you know, they haven't beaten them. This is not by any means a power team, but they have not beaten them. So I think that the players are eager to prove that they can at least finish a season strong. Again, with a redshirt senior, the dynamic is a little different than maybe if you go to a sophomore or a freshman and say, hey, what does this month mean to you? But there's still a lot to gain and improve for that program. It's not just about saving Dana and you know, giving him another year, at least a little boost of confidence going in. These players also understand that West Virginia remains a question mark in the Big 12.
Let Dunkin' Donuts' new sweet black pepper bacon sandwich take your bacon sandwich to the next level with four slices of crispy peppered bacon, caramelized to perfection. It's the bacon experience you've been waiting for. So peppery, so crisp, and with a touch of sweetness. It's bacon deliciousness like you've never tasted before. Try Dunkin' Donuts' new sweet black pepper bacon sandwich today. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer.
Good luck to the Norwood Knights. From Dunkin' Donuts with three great and convenient locations in your area, including Irwin, Murraysville, and North Versailles. America runs on Dunkin'.
The home of the Super Sub, Mike and Dave's Italian Bread Place, Deli and Catering in Greentree. Call 412-922-2970 and Mike and Dave's Boardwalk Sandwich Shop in Brentwood on Sawmill Run Boulevard, right across from Get-Go. Call 412-885-1155. Brentwood location is not open on Sundays. Heading to the game? Call ahead at 412-922-2970 and then stop by Mike and Dave's Italian Bread Place, Deli and Catering in Greentree to pick up the Super Sub, plus the sandwich rings, sides, salads, desserts, and everything you need for the perfect tailgate and viewing party. The Super Sub Saturday and Sunday special is only $16.95, regularly $19.95, and includes your choice of a large side, which feeds up to three people at no additional cost. Go right now to theitalianbreadplace.com to watch the Super Sub being made. Theitalianbreadplace.com.
WVU Talk on Trib Live Radio is brought to you by Frank Walker Law, criminal defense attorney, frankwalkerlaw.com.
Trib Live Radio presents the College Football Locker Room with Pitt beat writer Jerry DePaula, Penn State beat writer Bob Cohn, and West Virginia beat writer John Harris. We got the local college football teams covered on Trib Live Radio.
Welcome back to the College Football Locker Room on Trib Live Radio, and Bob Cohn is anxious to talk about Penn State, and we're going to give him the stage.
Champing
a lot to talk
bit,
about.
That's the fourth cliche. Champing at the bit.
Go ahead. Well, it's yours, man. Me and Josh.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Battery,
I was. Josh watching this.
Don't
kind
let
of
us disturb you, man.
Josh was giving us the hurry up offense signals.
Already?
He's calling the next four plays.
Well, I should hurry up because I expect Jerry to come in.
Well, it's on you.
At any second, and then we'll have to talk about
Pitt. He's just going to have to wait his turn right now. Wait. So just go ahead. You got the stage.
Well, you know, in the last few weeks, as we were saying during the break, I believe, as they say in, you know, that's radio talk, during the break, there's a perception that Penn State was having a terrible season, and this was even when they were 6-2. And actually, I wouldn't use the word terrible, but it had been a lackluster season. You know, the ridiculous loss to Temple to open it up, the five cupcakes they beat in and out of the conference, the big loss to Ohio State. But then they play last week against Illinois, and Illinois is not Ohio State. It is not Michigan. It is not Michigan State. It is not Northwestern, and it certainly isn't Penn State. 39-0. Illinois is not a terrible team either, and they came in there. They were just totally outclassed. Penn State played its most complete, most balanced game, both sides of the ball. 37 rushes, 33 passes, Hackenberg. Now up to 164 straight attempts without a pick. His last interception, game two, against Buffalo. He was 21 of 29, 266, two touchdowns, and he caught a touchdown pass, which was kind of a fun play to see.
Show off.
I wouldn't expect it to be a staple of the offense. Saquon Barkley, the freshman sensation, running back. Had a nice game. Look, teams have found out who this guy is. And Illinois's got a decent run defense. So, for him, a ho-hum game is 20 carries, 84 yards, a touchdown. If you saw the touchdown, he jumped over a guy into the end zone, landed on another guy. That made the highlight reel. I don't know. They still call it the highlight reel anymore.
They still call it the highlight reel.
It's still a highlight
just,
reel.
Just, you know, made YouTube. You know, it was a fun play. Hackenberg spreads the ball around. He hits seven different receivers. They are starting to come together. Hackenberg is getting this offense now. After the Temple debacle, disaster, travesty, farce, whatever you want to call it, the 10-sack game, they made some adjustments. They scaled back the offense, quicker passing. They had Hackenberg move a little bit. He moves pretty well. He's 6'4". He's listed at 220, 225. Sometimes he looks bigger. He's got decent footwork. He's not a lumbering kind of guy, but by any stretch. He's not Russell Wilson either. But he's serviceable in the pocket, and he seems to be much more comfortable week to week to week. After three games, he was 107th in passing efficiency in the country. That's 107. That's bad. That's really bad. He's up to 59th. 59th isn't great, but you go from 107 to 59. And every week, by the way, it's like climbing steps. Every week, he's gotten better with that. The offensive line, still not a grade-A first-class line. They just don't have the depth. Some of the guys they have, frankly, could be better. But they're playing better. And even though they've had some injuries, they've played seven different combinations, but they're starting to play a little better. He's got a running game. And then, of course, the defense, which has been good all year, played an outstanding game, not against the greatest offense in the world, but, you know, a shutout's a shutout, and it wasn't against, a D2 team. And so right now, everything's clicking. What they lack... So far, they don't have what you call, and tell me if this is a cliche, signature win. Is that a cliche?
Yeah, that's number four.
Okay. No, it's five, actually. Okay. Well, what if I use the air quote signature win?
Why do you worry about what we think, man? You just say what you want to say.
I care.
Don't worry about it.
I care too much. About each and every one of you in this room.
You care too much.
That's always been my problem. I care too much. And at this point, I don't think there's anything I can do about it. I think that ship sailed a long time ago. Okay, so they're looking for that marquee win, that big win, that wow win. Now, could Northwestern be that be that team? Well, you know, John, that's what I thought first. If you look at the polls, and I'm talking about the AP poll and the coaches poll, they don't show up. They're not in the top 25. However, guess what? In the college football playoff rankings, you know where they are? They're 21st.
Mm.
Believe it or not, Northwestern is 21st.
They were ranked, right, earlier this year?
Yeah, they were ranked until losing to Michigan and Iowa back-to-back 78-10. But yet, the playoff committee looked at that. Well, what they looked at was their opening win over Stanford, mm-hmm. Stanford's only loss. They won at Duke. That's a tough out.
Yeah.
They won there. But it's mainly that win over Stanford looks better and better every week because Stanford keeps winning. Penn State doesn't have a win like that. But I think now, I didn't think so before until I saw that college football playoff ranking. We can't call it a poll, but it's a ranking. And they're in there. So now Penn State has a chance, I think, to ready for number five or six, make a statement. How's that?
It'd definitely be their best win yet. I mean, is there any other teams even remotely as respectable, I guess, as Northwestern?
No, this would be the game where they could really get some attention and be taken, maybe a little more seriously. Right now, they're 7-2, and it's kind of a soft 7-2. And speaking of soft, look who just comes in. Jerry DePaula, missing a chair. Josh said to take his chair. Josh is giving up his chair for you, Jerry.
Josh is a good man.
In fact, I don't know if you can sit right where Josh. Where did Josh just leave? Is he like, has Josh left the building?
Yep.
Okay.
He's going to get lunch.
You're in charge, Bob.
Well, you're sitting in the driver's seat, Jerry.
Well, anyway. I can't compete with you.
Well, let's wrap up this Penn State talk because I know Jerry and everybody else wants to hear about Pitt or talk about Pitt. I don't think Jerry wants to hear about Pitt. I think he wants to talk about Pitt. And I understand there was another encounter with Coach Narduzzi that my usual bad timing. I walked in at the end and I just missed it. And I was kind of hoping Josh would be here to replay it for all of us. And Tim Benz, who was on the show earlier, referred to it as what, guys?
douche dart.
A douche dart. Oh, come on, Bill. You can say it. He said douche dart on the air. That's how he described, I guess, your interaction with Coach Narduzzi. So let me just wrap.
It's all one-sided.
Yeah, well, he said that's how Narduzzi's response, that's how he described it, was.
So we'll just wrap up Penn State saying that they have what I think is their, you know, their biggest game of the year that they can win. There's no way they're going to beat Ohio State. Sorry. This game they can win. It's a quality opponent. It's on the road. And we'll see what happens. And on that note.
Why are you apologizing?
What do you mean?
Sorry.
Oh, about them saying no way they could beat Ohio State? Because there's somebody out there going, well, how do you know? You know, you put them on.
They
you
came
know,
incredibly close
you
last
put
year.
The pads on and then you play to win the game and all that garbage.
If not but, for some poor officiating, they might have ruined Ohio State's shot at a national championship.
It might have been 38-13 instead of 38-10 or whatever it was.
Last year they went to overtime.
Yeah, but this year, Penn State, last year was at Beaver Stadium, number one. And I don't think Ohio State at that time was as good as they were about to get. I think that game actually kick-started
could be true.
Their
nonetheless,
amazing run.
That was an overtime.
And this year, and that Ohio State game would have been worse if Meyer pulls Cardale Jones, his quarterback, and goes with the other kid who's now been suspended. But anyway, enough Penn State talk. It's all talk anyway. You got to go out there and prove it.
Did they lose the game?
Oh, yeah. No, they lost the game.
5 or 6 or 7 touchdowns, something like that.
That's my point, Jerry. Jerry, that there is no way they were going to beat Ohio State inside the Shoe.
Very insightful, Bob.
On blackout night at the Shoe, by the way, 107,000 people all decked out in black. And it was a great atmosphere. But anyway, so no segue. You know, there's no easy transition. I'm just going to throw it to Jerry, as they say. Jerry, first of all, what happened with you and Coach?
Well, the coach was talking about how somebody asked him about Lafayette Pitts.
Oh, do we have it here?
Oh,
just
got
wasn't
it?
Playing good at that point. They were going after him, and it was better to get him out there and see what another guy did. And Ryan Lewis came in and I think had like 27 snaps and did well. So it was good to get someone else in there. And, you know, hey, you guys have bad days writing sometimes. I've seen some of your stuff, Jerry. Just kidding. Because I really don't read your stuff. But everybody has a bad day.
Whoa!
And he didn't have a particular great day.
Who's that laughing in the background?
He got you twice.
He reads it.
Thanks, hey, Mike.
Didn't like my writing. And
thanks to Mike Barker for queuing that up, by the way.
If he doesn't like it, if he doesn't read it, how does he know if he doesn't like it or not? That's what I don't care.
Oh, yeah, we never read that stuff. Yeah. I
well,
never read it.
You know what? The coach has been...
He caught himself, see? He admitted that he reads it. And then, you know, coaches are never... Head coaches are never supposed to admit that they read anything.
Well, he was throwing that blank dart at me, you know, that coaches like. And he's been doing that almost all season, you know, with me and some other
He likes guys. You, Jerry.
Well, what's not to like, Bob, you know?
What's not to like, indeed.
And I treat him fairly, I think. And, you know, I hit him with some tough questions every once in a while. He looks at me out of the corner of his eye sometimes and... Then, you know,
well, you share a common heritage, and I think there's a bond there,
we
a brotherhood.
Like Italian food, yeah.
That's right.
Pasta, we're big on pasta.
I like Italian food, and I don't share your heritage in the least.
If you came over, maybe Coach Narduzzi could get to know you, and you two might hit it off. Better than you hit it off with the previous coach, by the way.
My one encounter with Paul Chris did not go well, but that's neither here nor there.
Well, anyway, I guess we should talk about the game. You know, Pitt Notre Dame. A lot of excitement over there. The players are all talking about how they get up for games like this because it's Notre Dame. And although Mike Caprera had an interesting comment just a little while ago, he just came from the interviews, and he said all this talk about Notre Dame this and Notre Dame that, and they invented football and everything else. He said it gets old after a while, and I think these guys are going to. And he said it. I think he did say we're going to go into this game with a chip on our shoulder.
Uh-oh, the dreaded chip on the shoulder.
That's number 6, 7?
He didn't use those words, but someone else used those words to me today. I spoke with Tony Dorsett today.
Who?
Tony Dorsett. This year is the 40th anniversary of Tony Dorsett's 303-yard game against Notre Dame at Pitt Stadium.
Well, there you go.
1975. And, of course, Eric Parsegian famously said he's a skinny kid from Aliquippa. Skinny little kid from Aliquippa, he'll never amount to anything in college football.
Well, Ara also went He also went for the tie back in.
Exactly.
Would you remember? And you're way too young.
69 or something. 68.
66.
Against Michigan State, right?
The 10-10 right. Classic tie on the day
Bubba
of life.
Bubba Smith, they all taunted him.
Kill Bubba, kill.
Yeah. So he made the comment about Tony Dorsett. You know, so he backed off recruiting him. So every time Dorsett played against Notre Dame, he sort of took it upon himself to play a little bit better. You know, to up his game a little bit, and he did. 303 yards is a record against Notre Dame. Plus, 754 yards is a record for a career of any opponent, any running back against any team in college football.
So you're comparing Pitt's running back of the week, running back du jour. They're down to their third or fourth.
Olison, yeah, I think.
I'm not comparing him to
Tony. Well, you're using that example history is going to repeat.
No, I'm not. I didn't say that.
304 yards.
I'm just saying that. I just wanted to bring that story up because I talked to Dorsett today, and I do have an interesting.
You're a name dropper.
I do have an interesting Johnny Majors story. I am a name dropper.
Oh, Johnny Majors now.
I spoke to him too.
Look at you.
He's dropping names right and left.
Yesterday, actually. Yeah. First of all, we want to talk about the game that's coming up Saturday. Pitt does not have the talent on offense or defense. Qadree Olison is their best running back. He was pulled from the North Carolina game because he wasn't doing well in pass protection. He's only run for like 70 yards a game since they got 200 some against Youngstown. So I really don't think that Pitt has the horses to beat Notre Dame. The rankings came out last night. Notre Dame is fifth in the country. They have so much at stake in the rest of their games, including this one. They can't afford to look past Pitt. They're going to win this game by two, three touchdowns.
Well, now what did Jackie Sherrill say? I'm sure you talked to Jackie Sherrill.
No, I didn't talk to Jackie Sherrill, but you want me to tell you my Dan Marino? My Johnny Major story?
Absolutely.
All right, well, as you know, you remember, Bob, on Sunday mornings, you would get up and you would watch Lindsey Nelson and Paul Hornung call the replay of the Notre Dame game from the day before. You remember that?
Oh, yeah.
So Paul Hornung.
And they'd say, and we move to further action.
Exactly. And Paul Hornung, of course, won the Heisman Trophy.
The Golden Boy, yeah.
In 1956. And the runner-up that year was
Johnny Majors.
So they were kind of friends.
Single wing tailback.
So apparently, the night before the Pitt-Notre Dame game in 1976, which was moved to the opening game of the season over Three River Stadium for ABC, they had a pep rally before that game, before they left for Pittsburgh. It was a game with that South Bend. They had a pep rally the night before, and Paul Hornung said, this was a year after the 303, he said, if Tony Dorsett runs for 100 yards, I'll jump out of the press box. Well, Major got the story wrong. Major said it was 200 yards. So he runs for 181 yards in the beginning of the fourth quarter, and Pitt's winning the game big. That was their national championship season. Majors pulls him from the game, and he didn't get his 200 yards. So the next year, Johnny Majors runs into Paul Hornung at the Kentucky Derby. You know, Hornung like to put a shilling or two on a sporting event.
Who?
A shilling.
A shilling.
I don't think you're allowed to gamble with shillings.
A ruble? How about a ruble?
You could gamble with rubles.
So anyway.
Wait, you're saying Paul Hornung liked to bet?
Yeah.
I believe he was suspended for that very thing.
This was after he was out of football. It was 1976.
Yeah, so he could just
do whatever he wanted.
Yeah.
So Majors walks up to Hornung at the Kentucky Derby and says, you know, I saved your life. And Hornung says, what are you talking about? He says, Dorsett out of the game before he got 200 yards, so you wouldn't have to jump out of the press box. Now, the other story is it was really 100 yards, and I talked to John Pelosi today, who was a center on that Pitt team. He said it was 100 yards. He saw it Hornung later.
Who'd you talk to?
John Pelosi.
John Pelosi?
Pelosi. Oh. Not Belushi, Pelosi.
Now, that would be name-dropping if you talked to John Pelosi.
He was a center on that team, and I told him, I said, well, Major says it was 200 yards. Now, it was 100 yards, so I walked up to him, And I said to Hornung, I says, Pelosi says, how do you survive that fall from the press box? Because Hornung just walked away.
So that's like welching on a bet.
Kinda is.
Which I'm guessing Paul Hornung has done once or twice in his life.
Well, he didn't jump out of the press box apparently. But the point is, Bob.
Oh, there's a point.
Yeah, what's the point, Jerry? What's the point?
The point is, Pitt's going to lose this game. Even if Tony Dorsett played running back, I think they might lose.
But you're going to talk to a lot of important historical people about
John Pelosi, Johnny Majors, Tony Dorsett.
Who is this Tony Dorsett you speak of? I only know Tony Dorsett.
Tony Dorsett. Well, that's another story. According to Johnny Majors, Phyllis George.
George, you talked to her.
No, I did not. But Majors told
former Miss America, you know.
She was Miss America, wasn't she? Majors says that he's such a beautiful girl. He says, I had a hard time concentrating when I talked to Phyllis George. But she's the one who called him Dorsett initially. She's the one who made up the name Dorsett.
Phyllis George started the as we know it pronunciation.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I thought that was his wasn't it Dorsett wanted to be known as Dorsett?
You see, Johnny Majors is 80 years old. Sometimes he gets things confused. You know?
You don't have to be 80 to get things confused.
Well, that's true, as we well know.
Well, so Jerry has already told us he's picking Notre Dame, 2-3 touchdowns.
He said he stated it forthrightly. He said they will. You said Pitt will. You said Pitt will lose. Will lose. I think they'll lose.
No, that's called a prediction, isn't it?
Let's chime in. It's prediction time, guys. Let's chime in with everybody else's predictions. We'll move around. Let's do Pitt. Jerry's going with Pitt. Bob.
No, I'm going with Notre Dame. I'm going with that.
Jerry's going with Notre Dame. Okay. Bob, you're going with
31-17.
Jerry, 31-17.
Do we ever revisit our picks?
No.
We are this next week.
We could say anything. I could say Pitt's going to win 52-3.
Say it.
Well, I won't. I'll say Notre Dame 28-10.
Bill?
I like Notre Dame 35-10.
What's the line?
7.5.
What?
7.5.
Oh, well, I have to make a phone call.
Excuse me. 42-21.
Holy
cow.
All right, so
seven
agreement.
And a half.
All four of us. Yeah. Imagine that.
Now, okay. I don't know much about point spreads, but
that sounds
a little light.
Penn State and your alma mater.
This is your life.
Northwestern?
For you, hasn't it?
That's right.
This season? You've been to Maryland?
Right.
Now you're going to Northwestern?
That's right. I have a few more places. If they played Arizona State,
Bob
that would be another
this is
play.
Your life.
I'm not sure I want to revisit my life, actually.
Who do you got? Who do you like, Bob?
Well, I think...
I know you like, but who are you predicting?
Yeah, I think it's going to be fairly low-scoring game. And, you know, I'm drinking that blue Kool-Aid now. I've been listening to James Franklin, and his positivity is overwhelming. And I'm picking the Nittany Lions 21-10.
Didn't Northwestern beat Stanford?
Yeah. I believe we got into that while you were tardy, while we were busy being late, as usual.
I was talking about chips on the shoulder.
Well, talking about why
my job, Bob.
What's that?
We want to hear what Bill West thinks about this prediction.
Northwestern 2017 in overtime.
Overtime?
Yeah, I think it's a thriller.
Yeah.
I agree with that, Bill. Yeah. I'm going to say Northwestern 24-21.
Oh, you doubters, yes. You Penn State haters.
I'm jumping on the bandwagon. I'm going to say 17-14 Northwestern.
You too?
You're the only one, Bob.
I told you.
But the other three
been
agreed,
chugging
though.
That Kool-Aid,
it's a
man.
It's a field goal difference. So we all think it's close.
I've bought in.
Yes, you have. Coach Franklin will be proud of you, Bob.
I don't think he'll ever be proud of me, but, you know, we can always strive for, you know, things beyond our grasp.
Okay, well, let's let Bill lead off.
Like that.
West Virginia, Texas Tech, and Morgantown.
Oh, boy. I got to do my math here. 55-48. I don't know. Texas Tech.
Wow.
How many yards is Russell Shell going to rush for? His first
40.
Game? 40.
No. Shell, we were discussing this before you got here, actually.
He
might be in a bad place. This could be a good game for him. I don't think it will be, though. I think he rushes for 40 yards. I think Wendell Smallwood rushes for 150, though.
Tech's defense, is that bad?
It's like second worst in the country.
In the country?
Yeah.
You have 70 points consecutive weeks?
Yeah. But two teams that score a ton. Yeah. It's going to be a 90-point game combined.
Okay, 90-point game.
Take the over.
Say
48-41 West Virginia.
Ooh. Say 42-38.
Who?
Someone.
West Virginia.
Oh, okay.
So, I like 55-51. I'm just picking a crazy score, Tech.
So when they're playing basketball, they won't score that many points.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah, not that West Virginia basketball.
Josh is telling me that it's time to. We got more time?
Okay. Well, we can revisit this, Russell. Jerry, we were talking about this, and we want your thoughts. We were going to have Bob impersonate you. Would
he couldn't do that.
Would Russell Shell have been better off staying at Pitt at this point? I know you haven't dug into the West Virginia side
of his story.
Well,
no, because my information was, even though he was planning on leaving Pitt, Pitt was planning on suspending him, you know, academic-wise, and just the fact that he wasn't working hard enough. I don't think he would have had a great season under Paul Christ in 2013. And, of course, James Conner came on the scene.
Right.
James Conner turned out to be a better back than Russell Shelk could ever hope to be.
So. Maybe they could loan him out right now, though. Because right now, Pitt could use him.
Yes, Pitt could use a little bit more talent, but you know, I'm not sure that he's any better than Kadri Olsson. You know,
really,
and Olsson's not that good.
Oh man!
So
wow!
An indictment of Russell.
The Russell Shell bashing never stopped.
We're not bashing him.
A hero of Hopewell.
We're trying to give him the benefit of
the
doubt.
In spring practice,
the kid dares to leave.
He walked off the field, walked onto the trainer's table, and said to the trainers, "I'm tired."
Well, he was.
Spring practice.
He was tired.
Coaches were not
happy. When you're tired, you should rest.
He was honest about it.
It's interesting to me.
Yeah.
No excuse for being tired.
The WU guys still refer to him as the man, or at least they kind of view him as the man. There's definitely an ego there and a personality with Shell that I think the coaches and other players are aware of. And Sider, going back to the West Virginia running backs coach, he was very quick to praise Smallwood for being so tough physically and mentally. You know, he's played through an injury this year, but also has just been able to deal with adversity. There wasn't any such words of praise for Shell. It was more so that he's going through this adversity right now, and he has a chance to respond. But no one was coming to his defense in terms of...
Shell is not exactly a gladiator.
He was supposed to be the next Tony Dorsett.
High school, you say.
Funny how that worked.
It didn't work out so well.
No.
He was better off going to West Virginia first, straight out.
Yeah, yeah.
What about UCLA? We forgot about that. Should he go in there?
That's right. Yeah, that was actually his in-between stop.
Some buddies out there.
I don't know. It's so important.
I don't think that would have worked.
It's so important that you pick the right school. Not necessarily the biggest name or the most famous coach, but we don't think the West Virginia system fits, or he fits the West Virginia system as a running back. It's just so important for kids to not to go with the crowd. Just go with, you know, you don't necessarily have to go to the biggest school. Just go to the best school. If you're good,
he will
get a chance to play at the next level.
He fit at Pitt because Pitt runs
that. Yeah, that
kind
was a good
offense.
Fit for him.
The Western Union offense.
Okay,
is not
so
his style.
Stuff was happening there. But
it's also important to go to class and do your homework
and
things like that. So.
Go weight training and do all that stuff. Yeah.
That's a topic for next week's show.
Are we forgetting about Russell Shell's family obligations? He's a dad. He's being a good dad.
Twin daughters.
The bills have to be paid. We have to go. You've been listening to the College Football Locker Room on Trib Live Radio. We had a great time. We'll be back next week.